to the 74th Womanthology podcast. My name is Fiona Tatton, and I'll be your host. Womanthology is the digital, magazine, and professional community powered by female energy and ingenuity. We champion equal recognition and reward for everyone, sharing opportunities, ideas, and a deep pool of collective wisdom, supporting each other to be unstoppable. In this, our ancestry episode, I speak with Kay Jones, the historian. Kay discusses how we all need to reclaim women's history and how every month should be Women's History Month. We also delve into the idea of epigenetics and whether or not we might all unknowingly be affected by the treatment of our female ancestors. A quick reminder that you sign up for the Womanthology newsletter by filling in your details on the front page of our website at womanthology.co.uk. You can also join our LinkedIn community by visiting linkedin.com/company/womanthology and find us on X, Instagram and Facebook. Welcome to the Womanthology podcast, and today we have with us Kay Jones, and she is the historian. Am I saying that right, Kay? Are we all good?
You are.
That's good. I want to enunciate correctly and get everything right. So it's Women's History Month at the moment, as you will well know, because I'm sure you're rushed off your feet. And we're doing a bit of an ancestry slant on this written issue and the podcast as well. But we're going to talk about you and all the amazing work that you're doing, because we were connected on LinkedIn, weren't we? And then I lost you, Kay, on LinkedIn, and I was desperately trying to find you again. You know, sometimes you connect with people on LinkedIn and then you don't see a post from them. You can lose them. And I was really hoping that I would find you again, and then a post popped up and I was like, that's who I need to speak with. So thank you for being here today. And are you enjoying Women's History Month so far?
Thank you, Fiona. Thank you for inviting me on. I'm glad that we found each other again on LinkedIn. I'm always enjoying Women's History Month. My only bugbear, which will always be the bugbear, is that we don't do it all year.
Yes, make every month Women's History Month. We've had all this history that's everything slipped past. We need to bring it to the forefront. So for my part, the Womanthology's part, I'm going to do my very best to make that happen. So I'm going to start by asking you if you could give us a bit of background about your educational background and your career to date. So who is Kay Jones?
What a question. Honestly, I feel like there was never anything else that I could have done, and there never will be anything else that I probably could do. I feel like there is no plan B, and here we are, and it was always meant to be. I kind of knew this would be the track from being about 15. I liked history. I did like history anyway, but I'm sure a lot of listeners in this age group will remember back in the olden days when we all had to read Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men for GCSE English. And it's just the saddest book. It's just, honestly, it's so traumatic. I'm so glad they don't have to read that anymore. But the only female character in the book, if you haven't read it, is known as Curly's wife.
Oh.
And I was like, why hasn't she got a name? And of course, I put my hand up and I asked the question, and I really did have a wonderful English teacher. And she just smiled at me and she was like, you tell me. Boom, that was it. That was it. So I've spent the last 22 years finding out why Curly's wife doesn't have a name. And every time I look in a different year, every time I look in a different place, every time I look at a different event, I find a new Curly's wife and a new answer. And so it's just never ended. So I didn't stick with literature for lots of reasons. I went on and did medieval history as my A-level. But in the end, at uni, I ended up in my eternal quest to find women. I specialised in 19th century female offenders. So that was really interesting. That was working class women, women like me, minus the crime, obviously. And I've done quite a lot of work as well on 19th century, kind of that overlap between crime, mental health, gender, sexuality. It's just a really interesting piece in the middle. And that was it. I have worked in schools. I am also a qualified history teacher. But for a long time now, I've run this company. So I write, edit, fact check textbooks, I give talks, I do outreach. I do as much as I can to tell women's story and to encourage other women to realise that they have a story, a really big story, that we generally are not taught about when we're at school.
Absolutely. And since doing womanthology, the thing that I've come to realise is that history is actually at the centre of all of our content and everything that I do. And the reason why I'm so very passionate about giving women a safe space to share their own stories so they can say, here's me, this is what I do, this is my job, this is where my passion is. Because over history, women haven't had that voice. So it feels like a culmination of decades or even centuries of women not being given an opportunity and not being given a voice. I didn't realise until I was speaking to you now, but actually I'm trying to right these historical wrongs. We were talking before the podcast about why should women have to spend huge amounts of time creating Wikipedia entries, editing Wikipedia entries, because women have been ignored or shunned, or worse still, their ideas have been taken by somebody else. That happens to other underrepresented groups as well. It's not just women that that happens to. There's other examples of that as well. But it's just so frustrating that we're having to try and correct all of these wrongs, if you like.
Yeah, it is. I think you refer to it as a burden. And I think it is a burden, but it's also a joy at the same time, because women have always advocated for themselves, always. Like, that's one thing that this work has taught me. Like I say, wherever I look, whatever time, whatever year, whatever place, women have always advocated for themselves. But it is actually a joy to go back and find that we do have this really long, really deep, really interesting history, regardless of how you identify. You're a woman, and you are, whatever your racial group is, whatever your socioeconomic status is, we've all got these access to these histories. Well, I'm trying to make the access easier as I can. But it is a joyous thing. This is an act of reclamation. And I think it's something that more women should be involved in.
I love that. And we've got you as our guide now, our guide through the whole of history. I thought I was busy. I think that you're even busier. So could you talk us through a bit more, Kay, about day-to-day, the type of things as the historian? So you might be out and about, or you might be writing, you might be editing, or you could be in a company, or you could be in a school, or what sort of things would you be doing?
Yeah, so I do work with other publishing companies, not just here in the UK, but in the US as well, in the Middle East. This is something that I really want to emphasise as well, is that when we're talking about what women's history is, what I am not referring to is Elizabeth I and the suffragettes on repeat. That is not my kind of women's history. And don't get me wrong, if that's your kind, that is fine. Like, you fill your boots. I'm absolutely, I've got your back, 100%. But what I'm advocating for is that we go back and look at all the stories that we know already, the Black Death, the Norman Conquest, World War One, World War Two, whatever they might be. And we find the women who are missing from what we know about these stories already, right? Women have always been between 48 and 52% of the population. So why, you know, all the instances, for instance, all the times that I've talked about or taught the Black Death, why do I never talk about any women that are involved? Because we know they were. So where are they? So that's what I'm doing, is I'm looking at not necessarily topics and subjects that you might traditionally associate with women's history, because I'm not here for that. I think too much focus has been put on women-only history. That is not what I'm here to do. What I'm here to do is to integrate women into what we already have, because we know they were here. They were there. They were doing things. They were, you know, they experienced big events. They were impacted by them. So I can't say, like, I just do women-only history or anything like that. I'm trying to give talks so that people can see that women were involved in everything. They've always been there. They've always been part of the story. They've always contributed to it. And so that's really what I'm doing day to day, whether I'm writing that, whether I'm editing them back in, whether I'm fact checking and trying to get more women in. I teach as well. I teach about 6 hours of A-level history a week. The A-level history spec is notorious for its lack of women. So I'm trying to encourage students to look for women. Luckily, exam boards have to acknowledge any relevant content. So by relevant, that often means we can just slide a few women in there.
Like your style there. Just going to sneak some significant women in.
They're never there. They're never, ever there. So I will go away and find them, and then I will teach that to my students.
Oh, I wish you'd been my history teacher. I bet you'd have done the best history lessons. I might have kept up with my history had you been my teacher. Obviously, different time, different place. So we're in the midst of Women's History Month at the moment. But in terms of history as is, if we were to go back to basics about history, what history is and what it isn't, which sounds like maybe a bit of a odd question, but I think there's some bits that we don't always appreciate about what history is and what it isn't. Could you give us a bit of an overview?
Yeah, it's a good question. And this is what I mean about we need to reassess the things that we think we know all the time when writing women back in. I'm actually quoting one of the pioneers of women's history from the 20th century here. Her name was Gerda Lerner. And she said there was a difference. There were two types of histories, essentially. So we have history with a lowercase h, which is just everything that has ever happened to every person in every space forever. And it's constantly being made, right? It's, you and I are making it right now. But of course, the fact of the matter is that not all that stuff gets recorded. We could never sift all the way through it. It would be an impossible task. So the discipline of history, the stuff that I'm doing, is history with a capital H. And that is only actually about 3,500 years old. Because that came around at the same time as the development of writing. And so the very first histories were actually histories of kings. They were lists of kings. History's always had a very political angle. It's always been used to write biographies and propaganda and things like that. So I think it's really useful to make that distinction between lowercase and capital. I always do, because what we want to do is, you know, we know that women have been a feature of lowercase h and are making history all the time, but we need to increase the representation of that history with a capital H. Back in 2016, Bethany Hughes, you might have heard of her, really, really well known British historian, she said that of recorded history, women occupy only about 0.5% of it. So if you put that into years from 3,500, that's women's history is about 17 years old, which is pretty diabolical because we know, like I said to you earlier, women account at any one time for somewhere between 48 and 52% of the population. So they were there, they were doing things, they were making history. But of course, we do have to be mindful of the fact that if they only appear in about 0.5% of sources, we're never going to recover all of them. We're not. We have to be really realistic about that. But we still have to do our best to reclaim women's stories as far as we can and really center women in that capital H history.
So we're connected on LinkedIn, so a lot of our audience are big LinkedIn users, but I was scanning back through your posts and there was a brilliant post where I think it was a clip of Mary Beard and she was talking about when men get all excited about the Roman Empire, which just entertain me no end. So I would encourage all of our listeners to follow you on LinkedIn and then they can pick up on your posts. And you've also got your, I'll mention this more later as well, but you've also got your Substack, haven't you, which is a newsletter format. So I'd encourage people to sign up to that as well because there's some really good stuff in there.
Thank you. Yeah, I post on there every Thursday and I share the weird and wonderful things that I found the week before, what I'm working on, and try wherever possible to smash these myths and misconceptions wherever I can.
Well, you're doing a great job with it. No, technically, this is a women's ancestry issue. It's fascinating. Could you tell us a bit about what you've written in this area and the theory behind it?
Yeah, so this, when you said the word ancestry to me, I didn't necessarily maybe think the same thing that you thought. What I thought about was a study that was done back in 2015 in the hospital in New York. This was a genetic study of 32 male and female Holocaust survivors and their children. And the researchers compared the results with Jewish families who lived outside of Europe too. And what they found was that children of Holocaust survivors were far more likely to develop a stress disorder than the other group, right? So this is the idea of epigenetic inherited trauma. Now, the study was criticised because the sample's small. I'm not a scientist, so I'm really limited as to what I can say around that. But there was another study done more recently in 2018 that was done here in Britain. A British team found a connection between the Industrial Revolution and modern personality traits. So, for instance, people born in coal mining areas or heavily industrialised areas today are still more likely than those who live in rural areas to display higher levels of neuroticism, lower levels of life satisfaction, and also have a lower life expectancy. So when I think about these two studies, again, I'm not a scientist and I don't even know how you'd measure it, but what I was thinking of was women specifically and thinking about things like the witch trials, right? The witch wound. Is that something that epigenetically impacts women? Being silenced, being controlled sexually for thousands of years. These are the kinds of things that I think about when I think about ancestry. And I mean, epigenetics is relatively new, but I would love to see, again, I don't know how you would do it, but I would love to see more work done on that specifically for women over the next few decades, because I think the findings will be really insightful. Because I think a lot of women are carrying that is more than just from childhood or, you know, relationships, stress in their lives, big life events. And I just wonder the extent to which some of that could be traced back potentially, like I say, the witch trials, for instance. Because it's not really that long ago when you think about it.
So I think there's a huge amount to explore there. So hopefully that's something that we can keep speaking about and pick up about as well in potentially in a future podcast.
Well, I would just really like to highlight, if you go on Substack, that post is still there. And I've been writing weekly on Substack for well over 2 years. And that remains the most read post. It's the one that I got the most emails off the back of, most LinkedIn connections off the back of, because it resonated with so many women. I mean, obviously, women are primarily the people who read my newsletter. There are plenty of men who read it, but women do dominate. And I just feel like it is a subject worth exploring because it resonated with so many women. Still now, I get comments about it. And I wrote that 2 years ago.
So it seems like there might be a conversation that needs to continue there. And in terms of history, so there's been this common thread where often, not all the time, but often women have been misinformed or misdirected, been given the wrong information or have been suppressed. Lots of different things like this. Somebody gave me, as an example of this, a story about something called bicycle face, which on the face of it sounds like it could be something quite silly, quite amusing. But actually, when you scratch below the surface, not amusing at all.
Yeah, there's always an element of control to it, always an element of control to it. And, you know, you say it feels kind of silly, but you've got to remember that in the context, in the period, in that moment, that time and space when it happens, it's not silly. It's really serious. Bicycle face, although we laugh at it, our female ancestors, our male ancestors, we're not laughing about it. It was serious. Bicycle face is found in the 1890s in the US and all across Europe. And obviously, it's connected to the introduction of the bicycle, which for women particularly was really significant. I mean, bikes were affordable, they were pretty cheap, but they gave women a level of independence that they might not have had before, particularly middle-class women. And actually, I believe suffrage activists in the early 20th century used them in their work a lot as well. So they gave women more access, if you like, to the kind of public sphere, to be out and about, to be traveling independently, to travel in groups, to connect with each other. And in response to that, there are all kinds of these, again, like we might call it weird and wonderful, but it was serious at the time. And people did take it seriously at the time. Articles in newspapers and magazines about this phenomenon called bicycle face. Now, the symptoms, I use that term kind of loosely, a bicycle face, if you are cycling every day and you are a lady, are the really what we would call just getting out of breath. It's just getting out of breath. It's like a flushed face, a clenched jaw, bulging eyes, all these kinds of things. And the concern was that women who were cycling and displaying bicycle face were actually harming themselves. They were at greater risk of developing more serious illnesses. But there was also a sexual element through all this as well. Remember that, you know, late 19th century, this is all about purity culture, chastity. There was a concern that women would learn certain things about how their bodies worked sexually by the position of the saddle and whatnot. So bicycle phase almost becomes a bit of a moral panic on many, many levels, because we've got this independence piece, we've got this potential activism piece, we've got this sexual piece, and we've got this health piece. And if I come back to the point that you said at the beginning of the question, women have been misinformed and misled. That is women's history. That hasn't happened once, twice, three times. That is women's history.
Yeah, absolutely.
We have consistently been misled, misinformed. I mean, look at hysteria. It's funny, the term hysteria, because my best friend just pointed this out to me a few weeks ago. I'd never even considered it. Women today go and have an operation called a hysterectomy. Is that to remove the bit that makes them hysterical? What's that about? Yeah, right. There's a mind-blowing thought, isn't there? Why are we still calling it that? The wandering womb.
Yeah, because treatment for hysteria.
That's a piece. I mean, that's just one tiny piece. We haven't been told. I mean, again, this is only really recently, the last couple of years, that I even found this out. The first named author in history, the whole history of the world, was a woman. The person who invented chemistry was a woman. We've always been misled, misinformed for lots of reasons, for lots and lots of reasons. Again, it depends on time and it depends on place. And this is why the reclamation work, yes, it can be a burden, but this is why it's a great joy at the same time. This is why it's worth doing, because we're digging up things that we were never told about, that we don't know about, that isn't common knowledge. Why don't more people know that 0.5% of recorded history includes women? Why is that not day one of the history curriculum? Why isn't it? Because it should be. So to answer your question again, this is the women's story, is being misled, being misinformed, not being told.
Yeah, but now we've all got access to huge amounts of information. You're carrying around your phone in your pocket, which is essentially a small office slash PC. So we've all got access to this information. So this is an opportunity to learn about this stuff and to make it everybody's business to know about this stuff. So this is women learning about this stuff. This is girls in school, but it's also men and boys learning about this stuff as well. Yeah. It's for everybody. So I like your positioning of this, that it's an opportunity. It's like maybe a great renaissance or something. Is that the right terminology? But we can have this. Let's tell these stories and let's share the information and let's do all of these things and let's embrace this and really get to know more about this. So you're our guide through history. You're kind of curating history as well, aren't you, really? Because obviously it's so big that you couldn't possibly tell us about it all. So it's finding the most pertinent bits that are going to engage people and open up these discussions, which I think is a wonderful thing. So how can the Womanthology community engage with your work? We've touched on your Substack and your LinkedIn as well, but what would you like our community to do?
Well, it would be great to connect with more people on LinkedIn, and it would be great to bring more people to Substack and support the work, because every time somebody subscribes, every time somebody connects with me, the reach is just bigger. The reach is bigger. If anyone is interested in booking me to talk in Women's History Month, or ideally in the other months of the year, so that we profile this all the time instead of just one month of the year, I'm absolutely here to do that as well. So there are lots of ways to connect. And yeah, feel free to go back in the archives on Substack, have a read, have a learn. If there's anything you want to ask me, I'm always here. Send me an email, say hello, and I will do my best to answer any questions.
Well, that sounds like an amazing opportunity. And for our part, from the Womanthology side of things, we are always interested in history, but I think sometimes because of the way we structure the issues and things, then a lot of this historical stuff will get squished into one issue. But I think what would be great for us would be to keep that conversation going throughout the year, because in all the professions that we speak to around all the different issues type stuff, so we have a gender pay gap issue, we have stuff across different sectors, so women in tech, women in science. So it would be great to make sure that there's a historical reflective aspect to all of those issues as much as we can as well. So I think for our part, if we can help to do that, then it's really important.
Yeah, like you say, literally every issue that you cover, it came from somewhere. So where did it come from? How did it originate? Connecting past and present is a big part of what I'm doing. And it's definitely the right thing to do, is to connect the two and think about, if you really want to change things, you have to go back to the root. If you want to get more women into STEM, for instance, then you need to find out why women were not included in the first place.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, that's a big question. Big question. So what is coming up next for you? What are you looking forward to? What are you excited about?
Huge things. I mean, life-changing huge things that are in the pipeline that I can't really say anything about yet. But if you are on LinkedIn and on Substack, I will share when I can.
Oh, there's a teaser. We don't often get teasers on here. Oh,
honestly, Fiona, huge. I can't even put into words how huge they are. But I am looking to do a little bit more outreach, some more masterclasses, more talks. I've just started a paid series on Substack as well, Women's History by the Numbers. So that gives me an opportunity to do something that's never been done before, which is get into the stats and really delve deep, very, very deep. So that's a lot of fun as well. I've got 2 books that I'm currently writing. So they, I'm hoping, will be out this year as well. So there's always stuff going on, always exciting things going on.
Well, I feel really privileged to have been able to chat through these things with you today. Kay Jones, the historian, thank you so much for making time. And you did make time to speak with us. Incredibly grateful for that. And will you stay in touch with us?
Of course. And thank you for having me, Fiona. Thank you.
In this section of the show, we hear about the contributors who have shared their stories in our new written issue. The stories include Professor Cheery King, distinguished geneticist, acclaimed author and television presenter, discusses her career journey to date and her new role as the incoming director of the Milner Centre for Evolution at the University of Bath. Dr. Nick A. Falayan, co-founder of the Association for Black and Minority Ethnic Engineers, reflects on the history of engineering pioneers and discusses looking to a bright future for diverse talent. Kate Phillips and Lisa Forbes-Grant, nursing lecturers at the University of Leeds School of Healthcare, share the work they've done with colleagues to develop an award-winning digital family tree tool to bridge the divide between theory and practice for nursing students. Do check out our website, womanthology.co.uk, to read the full stories. Sadly, that's all we have time for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. And remember, if you want to support what we do, then share the link for the show on social media and also follow the show. Your feedback is really important, so please do rate and review the show in your podcast app. Do join us for our next podcast episode and written issue where we discuss the gender pay gap.